Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
If you're a longtime listener to this podcast, you know this is how we do opponent previews. 12 weeks out from the start of the season, one at a time, and we start at the end, which means we get to talk about the Egg Bowl in the middle of June. Richard Cross joins me, Sports Talk Mississippi, ESPN, the Ole Miss Radio Network at times, maybe a few other odd jobs, or anything that gets him out of a Friday on Sports Talk Mississippi. Richard Cross will do that for money. Richard, hey, man, how you doing? Good to talk to you.
I'm great. I don't mean to question your strategy on this, but would you not be better suited to start at the beginning of the season and then build momentum toward the end of the year?
My thought process is you start at the end, and then when you get to week one, you're previewing the team that you're playing that week.
Well, how beautiful is it that we're only 12 weeks away from the start of the season?
It's a glorious thing. Glorious. Absolutely fantastic. And a college football season, Richard, that I'm more excited for than ever before.
You know, I certainly am. I'm glad to hear that you've kind of gotten on board.
I know you are. We're about to talk about why.
And look, I mean, there are two reasons. Obviously, the fact that, you know, Ole Miss is in so many off-season conversations and the expectations are so high. That's certainly one of them. But honestly, more than that, this, you know, expansion to 12 teams, feeling like you've got more teams that legitimately have a chance to play for a national title, to be in the conversation at the end of the year. I never understood the arguments that people might, oh, this is going to devalue games in the regular season. No, it's not.
Yeah.
Now, it might devalue an SEC championship game. It might devalue Alabama, Auburn. Maybe it devalues Ohio State, Michigan. But I will take devaluing a handful of games to create more value for what, 30, 40, 50, 60 games over the last month of the regular season? Because the meaning for games that otherwise wouldn't have mattered, you know, outside of individual fan bases, man, this is stuff that's going to matter nationally as we're going down the stretch when, you know, who is it? When Notre Dame plays, I don't know,
USC?
Pick a team. Say what?
USC.
Yeah, USC. Yeah, Notre Dame plays USC. Let's say USC is not in the mix, but Notre Dame has got one loss at that point on the season. Well, that game's massive because that could be a season killer for Notre Dame, whereas, you know, if they win that game, they're still in the mix. And so, to me, it's just a better system overall. I think the only thing that we're missing is having those second round games on campus as well, because you're asking so much of fans to try and potentially travel for four straight weeks, maybe five straight weeks if you're talking about a conference championship game before that. But more than that, it's just those games are going to be so great on campus. And it feels like you're penalizing the top four schools by giving them a bye. Obviously, it's less of a road. They have to play one less game to win a national championship, but they're going to miss out on those on-campus environments, which I think are going to be unlike anything we've ever seen in college football.
Well, let's talk about the Rebels. That's obviously going to be a team that I think all year long will be in that discussion to be in the college football playoff. We've watched the evolution of Jackson Dart. You know, came in, a lot of hype, had a solid first year at Ole Miss. You knew there was some room to improve. I thought he was really, really good a season ago. What's this year for Jackson Dart? Is there another step up for him? Can he become one of the nation's top two or three quarterbacks?
This is a year where, if you're talking about the draft, it's not a banner quarterback class. I mean, everybody's talking about Carson Beck for obvious reasons, but you know, after that, you're talking about Jalen Milroe in the SEC and, you know, other guys in the SEC. So could he get into that league where he's, you said top two or three, certainly top five? I think so. To me, the trait that stands out to him more than anything else after having watched him for a couple of seasons is his toughness. And sometimes that's hard to measure. And sometimes toughness turns into bad decision-making where you take hits that aren't necessary. We saw that with Jaden Daniels a year ago at LSU, and yet he was still able to stay healthy enough that he won a Heisman Trophy and put up just incredible numbers. I think Jackson Dart can continue to grow in terms of accuracy. I think particularly accuracy with the deep ball, because he's got some pretty significant downfield weapons, of course, with the addition of Juice Wells, if he's healthy, and what Trey Harris brings to the table. So there are a lot of options in the passing game. When he's got those opportunities, he's got to cash in on them, and was good about that. I don't know that you're going to see like the eye-popping numbers that, for example, again, Jaden Daniels had last year, because of the component of Ole Miss's running game. As long as they're able to run the football, they're going to be pretty balanced offensively. They're going to be in that 50-50 range, not because Lane Kiffin believes you have to be at 50% passing and 50% running to be successful, but it gives them kind of an element of surprise, and you're able to keep defenses off balance. And one of the things that at times has been missing in the running game in the years past is Ole Miss's ability to run the ball when they want to run the ball and the opponent knows you're going to run the ball. To me, that's the mark of a great rushing offense. Ole Miss did not have that 2 years ago. I thought they did more so a year ago. When they wanted to kind of take the air out of the ball in the fourth quarter, they were able to do that. So improved accuracy, probably some better decision-making in terms of the hits that he takes, and just continuing to be that tough player, I think that's the next step. I don't think it's some gigantic leap this year. I think it's just kind of an incremental step as he continues to grow and becomes more experienced.
You talked about the running game, and for all the talk of the players that came into Ole Miss via the transfer portal, the most headlines were on a guy who went out, and that's Quinshon Judkins. It makes me think of that scene in Moneyball, Richard, where they talk about Giambi and they say, we can't replace him, but we can replace him in the aggregate. Is that what Ole Miss has done with the transfer portal here? Have they replaced what Quinshon Judkins gave them in the aggregate?
I don't know. I mean, if you're an Ole Miss fan, you certainly hope that that's the case. We've talked about this on Sports Talk Mississippi a good bit. You know, with Quinshon Judkins, Ole Miss led the SEC in rushing the last couple of years. The year before that, they led the SEC in rushing without Quinshon Judkins. Are they going to lead the league in rushing this year? I don't know. I don't know if they will. I think they're going to be able to run the ball effectively. It became kind of a sexy thing to say as the season was going along a year ago that people really fell in love with Ulysses Bentley because of the type of runner that he is. You know, you would look at Judkins, and he didn't have that same burst necessarily that Bentley had, but he was such a tough runner between the tackles. He hit the hole quickly. And he could certainly rip off a 20, 30, 40-yard run. It was – with Judkins, you didn't necessarily see him break the line of scrimmage at your own 25 and take it 75 yards to the house. But you don't have to do that to be a really good running back, and he is a really, really good running back. There's no way around saying that that is a loss in terms of production on the field. Will they be able to replicate it? I don't know. If you spread the carries around, you keep Ulysses Bentley healthy and kind of keep him upright, then I think he's got a chance to have a really good season. And then the hope is that some of the pieces that they've added through the portal will offset that loss. I like what you said, though, in the aggregate. That's good stuff.
Yeah. I know my stuff. I'm doing okay.
Makes you sound smart.
I got to do everything I can on that front.
I understand.
Is the key to the Ole Miss offense Caden Priestcorn? Is he the guy that takes this offense from good to great?
No. I think he's really, really important. I think Jackson Dart is that guy. Okay. I mean, saying
now,
that there's
that
a player.
That saying the quarterback. I mean, like from the skill position set standpoint.
I do think that a healthy Caden Priestcorn changes what you're able to do. And to me, the best Ole Miss example for that would be the 2020 season when Kenny Yeboah was in the mix for the first, seven or eight games. You know, he became less effective at the end of the year. He still hasn't blocked anybody. And then he opted out of the bowl game and maybe the last game of the regular season and the bowl game that he opted out of. But early in that year, he was such a mismatch that Ole Miss was able to do things offensively over the middle of the field that they weren't able to do for the next couple of years. Thought you saw that in the bowl game, not necessarily over the middle of the field. Priestcorn made a couple of unbelievable catches in the Peach Bowl against Penn State that were along the sideline. He's really athletic, especially for his size. He's kind of seen everything now as an older guy, you know, transferred in, fifth-year senior. So I do think he gives you the opportunity to be more dynamic offensively because of the mismatch you create and because the defense can't ignore that position and just sell out to try and cover the guys on the outside. They've got to account for him, and maybe it loosens up the coverage with some other guys as well.
Defensively, a season ago, a big improvement for Ole Miss. Pete Golding comes in, and he turns that defense in the right direction. I wouldn't say they were a dominant defense. The word I like to use last year, they were very opportunistic. They forced turnovers. They forced negative plays. They got after the quarterback. But they weren't necessarily a defense that would just go out there and grind you down and get a bunch of three and outs. You could move the ball on Ole Miss. They just somehow found a way to take it away from you or put you in a third and 21, you know, so at some point in the drive. I guess my question is, with the guys they brought in from the portal this year, can they be more of a get-off-the-field, quick defense this year, be a little bit more dominant?
I think so. And I think what you point to about creating turnovers was one of the big keys for them a year ago, whether that's in the passing game or forcing fumbles and being able to recover those fumbles. But when you think about the best defenses that we've seen in the SEC, and whether you want to say in recent years or over the last 30 or 40 years, there's a pretty common thread, and that's really good play on the defensive line. And this has a chance to be one of, if not the best defensive lines in Ole Miss history. Obviously, they add Walter Nolan, and that's a big piece, you know, a guy that everybody wanted in the transfer portal. And Ole Miss made a pretty significant commitment that that was the guy that they were targeting, and they went out and they were able to get that done. But you've got Jared Ivey, and you've got J.J. Pegues, and you got some other pieces. Who am I thinking about? Xavion Thomas. Is that right? Is it Xavion? No, he played Xavion Harris.
Yeah.
Sorry, wrong guy. So some pieces there on the interior of that defensive line that give you a chance to one, go get the quarterback, but two, have depth. I mean, it's not just three guys that you're relying on that you think are really good, but they're exhausted by the time the fourth quarter gets around. They got to do it, though, right? I mean, it's one thing to talk about the depth you've got, but then you've got to go out and you got to play. Ole Miss's schedule, I think, is pretty favorable, but you got to go out and do that on a week-in, week-out basis. And then the cliches, right? I mean, you got to have good team chemistry and a locker room that gets along and guys that really buy in, and they're all kind of playing for the same thing and really pushing not pushing the rope, but pulling the rope in the same direction. We'll see how many more cliches I can roll into that. But that stuff does matter. I mean, and we kind of roll our eyes about it sometimes. But one of the things that Ole Miss had a year ago was everybody being completely bought in. And I think that team even a year ago knew that it was a year away from, you know, they had the big stage against Georgia, and they just weren't good enough. And Lane Kiffin was very honest after that ball game when he was like, we don't look like them. We got to figure out a way to get a roster that looks like them. Well, they've got a roster that is a whole lot closer, especially on the defensive side, to looking like Georgia than at any point in recent history, and now you just got to go do it.
Jeff Lebby and Lane Kiffin, you know, friends, but got to be enemies. You know, kind of like you and I in some ways. Does their knowledge of each other cancel each other out? Does anybody have an advantage there because they know the other's tendencies?
No, I think players cancel each other out or maybe eliminate the canceling out. I mean, ultimately, it's about who's got the best players and then whether or not those players play well when they're supposed to. I mean, you're talking specifically about the Egg Bowl. I mean, yeah, Jeff knows what Lane's going to do, and Coleman Hutzler kind of knows what they're going to do. But Ole Miss does not run the most complicated offense in the country. I mean, it's not like they're just scheming you to death. They tend to scheme to guys that they believe can make plays in certain matchups. And they're not afraid to, if they find a mismatch, not just exploit it once, but go to it over and over and over again. I mean, I used the Caden Priestcorn example from the Peach Bowl earlier, kind of talking about the athletic person he is. Ole Miss found a mismatch against that Penn State secondary with Caden Priestcorn, and they went to the well multiple times. And so to me, yeah, you may know a guy's tendencies, but ultimately, if they're scheming, let's just say that Ole Miss thinks that it's got an advantage one-on-one on the outside with Trey Harris against whoever the corner is that's covering him. Well, how do you scheme to get the ball to Trey Harris? Well, you got to throw it to him, but maybe you've got to do things with other receivers that causes Mississippi State not to be able to double cover Trey Harris. And that's what I think they've been really, really good at. I've said before, I think Lane Kiffin is one of the best play callers in America, but the truth of the matter is I think he does as good a job of identifying mismatches and then exploiting those. And I think that's the thing that has led to the success. And I think that probably means more in a game like this than, Lane Kiffin knows Lebby, Lebby knows Kiffin, Coleman Hutzler knows, whatever. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Very good. Very good. Last question. How do teams beat Ole Miss this year?
They overwhelm them at the line of scrimmage. You know, when you think about the two games that Ole Miss lost last year, they lost to Alabama, they lost to Georgia. Both of those teams were physically better. Now, Alabama, if you go back to that game, they were good enough defensively in the secondary that they were able to hang with wide receivers, but more than anything, they put pressure on Jackson Dart, and they did that by just being better up front than Ole Miss was on the offensive line. And then Georgia was the same thing. I mean, it felt like Ole Miss had time to do absolutely nothing in that ballgame. So Ole Miss has got to have this offensive line that they've retooled through the portal. I mean, you've got guys that are back this year that were starters a year ago that are going to be backups this year when you add a couple of offensive linemen from Washington. And so when Ole Miss meets a team that is physically equal or better, and how many times is that going to happen? I mean, it's going to happen when they face Georgia. I think Oklahoma is going to have a better defense than people are giving it credit for going into this season. You know, we'll see with LSU. But outside of those three in particular, who's going to be physically better than this Ole Miss team is? I don't really think anybody is. And so when they get matchups like that, can they handle it, right? Can they handle them up front? And then can they create pressure? I mean, you think about Jalen Milroe. He was patient early in that game, and then he kind of exploded because Ole Miss couldn't get any pressure on him during that ballgame. So I don't know if that's the only way to look at it. I understand the question that you're asking, but that's kind of the thing, right? I mean, with what Ole Miss has done with this roster during the offseason, they have built a team that physically should be able to compete with just about anybody in the country. And so if you're going to beat them, one, I mean, obviously Ole Miss can't make mistakes, right? I mean, you can't have a day where right. Jackson Dart throws four interceptions. Yeah. No, I understand. But if you're just going to – if Ole Miss is going to play well and you're going to beat them, then you're going to have to be physically better than they are. And there aren't a lot of teams, I don't think, that fall into that category right now.
Especially on the Ole Miss schedule. I mean, the ones that you would right. say there, Ole Miss is missing them this year. It seems like Texas, maybe Alabama. They do have Georgia. LSU is LSU. We'll see. But should be a very interesting. Going to be a high-stakes egg bowl because I feel like it's going to be a situation, as I sit here today, Ole Miss will come in at maybe 9-2 and say, okay, if we win this game, we're going to the playoff. But if they don't, then there could be an issue there. And we'll have to see, you know.
Fingers I feel crossed. Like we have I feel like we've seen that scenario in the Egg Bowl before. And for the team okay. that was favored, it didn't go particularly well.
It did not. You know, the 2014 situation. But I'll be honest with you, Richard, one thing I've thought a lot about over the past few months since Levy was brought in is 2009 and Mullen's first year and Ole Miss coming to Starkville, needing to win to go to the Citrus Bowl, having all the momentum, State sort of just sitting there at 4-7. And then State put on a performance that day and won that game and sort of turned the tide in this rivalry for a few years anyway. And, you know, could Lebby do the same to Kiffin in this year where Ole Miss – remember that year Ole Miss was preseason top 10 as well. They were on the cover of Sports Illustrated. We all remember that. And, you know, that we all know what happened. So I don't know if that can be the case this year. I think this Ole Miss team is better than that 2009 Ole Miss team was. But we'll see.
I agree.
We'll see. Yeah. It's always fun to talk about it, though.
That 2009 season was weird, right? I mean, it finished with a Cotton Bowl win over Oklahoma State, I think.
That's correct.
But you had the disappointment of losing on that Thursday night in Columbia, South Carolina. I think the Rebels were fourth in the country.
Where Ole Miss goes this year. Want to point out the similarity. Yeah.
They do. I think this is a different South Carolina team, but that's not an easy place to play, and it looks like that could be a night game. So we'll see. Mm-hmm. It's going to be fun. And going back to where we started, really excited about this season for both reasons.
Oh, man, I'm just excited. It's college football, baby. We're always excited.
Absolutely.
So Richard Cross, you know where to find him. I don't need to tell you that. We'll talk to him again. So I'll be talking to him again in about an hour and 8 minutes. Looking forward to it.
Thanks, pal.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.